Our guest today is a candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. Our guest today was born and raised in Chicago, served as Mayor Daley's chief of staff, served as president of the Chicago Public Schools, served as president of the Chicago Park District, served as chairman of the City Colleges of Chicago, served as chairman of the Illinois State Board of Education, and for those of you who pay attention at the City Club, it was exactly 5 years ago today and this hour that Gary Chico spoke right here as chairman of the State Board of Education. When our guest today served as president of the Chicago Public Schools Board, he was honored as our Citizen of the Year by the City Club of Chicago. Long before we had 2,500 members, which we do today, thanks to you, we needed an annual dinner. And any time you would ask Gary, whether it was civic or charitable, no questions, yes, not any, check the date, I'll be there. So we're very, very grateful to Gary for that. Our guest today earned his Bachelor of Arts degree at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He earned his law degree at Loyola University School of Law. And he's so smart that he had his wife join us today. Sunny, give her a round of applause. Sunny Chico and their five beautiful children who all attended Chicago Public Schools. And just for the record, no one is better equipped to run the city of Chicago than our featured speaker today. Ladies and gentlemen, Gary Chico. Gary?
Hi. Have fun up here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very kindly, Jay. And I want to thank all of the great people here at the City Club. It's an honor to be with you. And I've really been looking forward to this for some time. But before I start, I'd like to ask if we could please join for a moment of silence to honor those victims of the senseless violence taking place all around us in this city, and especially what happened Saturday in Pittsburgh at the synagogue. Please, just a moment. Thank you very much. I want to thank a few people in the room, if I might, without whom I couldn't have properly launched this campaign. Over the last 2 months, my four co-chairs of our campaign have already been amazing. And so I want to pay tribute to Alderman Ray Lopez from the 15th Ward, Sarah Pang, my longtime friend and worked with me in City Hall years ago, Travis Powers, one of the best entrepreneurs in the city, and my longtime friend, Norm Bobbins from CIBC Bank. Thank you all. I want to thank my hardworking campaign staff who are here with us today. And most especially, I want to thank my wonderful family. My brother, Craig, has been with me through thick and thin. My beautiful wife, Sunny, please stand for a second, please. I'll tell you, forget the Illinois lottery. When I met my wife, I punched my ticket. And I thank you, honey, for everything you do to make our life special. I love you from the bottom of my heart. So a lot of you folks know me. You know I'm generally a future-oriented person. What can I get done today that will make a difference for tomorrow? I love the action of making things happen. I always have. But when I was thinking about this speech, I wanted to tell you just a little bit about how I got here and why I'm running to be the next mayor of the city of Chicago. Jay, can we put up that photo, please? All right, you see those two characters right there? I haven't seen that photo in a long, long time. But that's my brother Craig and me. Don't ask me how old the picture is, please. That was my younger brother and my best friend, Craig, and nothing's changed in all these years. That's us growing up together in McKinley Park on the southwest side of Chicago. Craig has been a mainstay of anything that I've ever taken on in my life. But more than that, he gives back to Chicago in his own ways. He's been the executive director of the Back of the Yards Neighborhood Council for 10 years, and he's been the vice chairman of the Chicago Housing Authority over the last 3-plus years. I'd like to have my brother stand for a minute so we can thank him for his contributions to Chicago. That photo probably wasn't taken too far from where where both of us grew up at 33rd and Ashland. Can you show the other photo, please? There you go. There's our lovely home. You can see. Craig and I shared a small bedroom in the middle apartment, and I can tell you that the day we got bunk beds, we thought we won the World Series. We'd play ball at 33rd Street Playground in McKinley Park, basketball, baseball, hockey, football, you name it. And on the way home, we'd stop at the 33rd Street Firehouse to have a soda and talk with the firemen. And then we'd have to hustle home to start our homework before our parents got home. Both of my parents worked. My dad owned a garage, and my mom was a secretary. They met at the Mary McDowell Settlement House, and they were the first of 4 generations in our family who would attend Chicago public schools. And I'm counting on my young grandchildren to go to CPS soon enough, and my son Michael, who's here with me, is not going to let me down. On Saturdays back then, I'd take the number 9 Ashland bus to meet my grandmother, who worked at Immaculate Heart of Mary Church on 45th and Ashland. This is the church that my grandfather, Encarnacion Chico, helped build when he came with my grandmother from Mexico. They both immigrated from Jalisco to the city of Chicago. And that church meant the world to them. My other grandmother, Ann Copeless, was the Greek and Lithuanian side of our family. See, somebody asked me, how come you never talk about being Greek or Lithuanian? I do all the time. People pick up what they want to pick up. She was the cook and house cleaner at the rectory. And my mom would have us go down there to help her out doing cleaning, going to the grocery store, whatever needed to take place. And when I got sent to the Jewel Food Store on 46th and Ashland, believe it or not, this is when I first learned the value of negotiation. Sometimes we wouldn't have enough money for all the groceries in that cart, and I'd have to call the manager, and I'd have to negotiate with this person to say, look, this is what I got in the cart, this is what I got in the wallet, what do you think? Can we work it out? And the managers were always generous and very kind about this and gave me a break and let me walk out with the groceries because they knew it was for the priests at the church. It was a very generous thing to do. It was a very Chicago thing to do. When we got a little older, Craig and I worked at our dad's and uncle's business, the town of Lake Garage on the south side. We parked cars, pumped gas, changed oil, towed cars. We did all kinds of stuff. And that was the life Craig and I knew growing up. Our childhood was a happy one. It wasn't lavish, as you saw from the house. It was like most other families that we lived with. It was just a good life. The one thing that was a hardship as a kid for me growing up is when I broke both of my hips as I was about to become a freshman in high school. I couldn't physically attend school that year because I was in a wheelchair. But there would be a tutor that came to my house from the Chicago Public Schools every day of the week to make sure that I was on track and didn't fall behind a whole year. This is when my life changed. I couldn't play ball anymore, so I had a lot of time to myself. I became far more studious and a heck of a lot more serious. I started thinking about what I wanted to do with my life, about my future, and ever since that time, I've always been someone who tries to think ahead. The years went by fast after that, and I earned a bachelor's degree from the University of Illinois at Chicago, and then a law degree from Loyola University School of Law at night. I went to work, I had a wonderful family, and did my best to provide for them. I was in my early 20s when I started doing the kind of work that would serve the city. I considered it an honor, and this gave me the opportunity over and over to get to know the people and the neighborhoods in every corner of this city. I lived in 9 of those neighborhoods myself, and I loved every one. Over the course of my career, I've served as the mayor's chief of staff, president of the Chicago Public Schools, president of the Park District, and the chair of the city colleges. I'm proud to say that in each and every one of these assignments, the teams I assembled to work together with me delivered positive and measurable results for this city. I knew in every one of these leadership positions that I was accountable to the mayor, and more importantly, to the city of Chicago, our people, our families, our children. I never took my eye off the ball, not for 1 minute. It was that sense of accountability that drove me and those around me to achieve real results. Nothing less was acceptable. I was tough on the members of my team, some of whom are here can tell you that, because I was just as tough on myself. In my experience, this is how you get things done. You find talent, you develop and manage it, you create a plan, and you hold everyone accountable for its accomplishment. All of these positions fall under the category of public service. But to me, these were all gifts. Public service is a gift. This city has given me every chance to professionally succeed while also providing the satisfaction of working to give back. I want to make sure that everyone in Chicago has the same opportunities that my brother and I had growing up, and this is why I'm running for mayor of Chicago. I believe that in this job, I can lead the charge to bring about our best days. You may have heard that there are more than a few candidates running for mayor in 2019. In fact, who in the room is not running? There's a lot of wind out there right now in the Windy City. And these candidates are all talking about what they're going to do. And that's fine. That's a big part of what campaigns are all about. But the other part, and I would argue it's something just as important, is how are you going to get it done? Why should people believe you? What have you done in the past that is any kind of reliable predictor of what you will get done in the future? This is a great big city that also has some great big problems at the moment. We all know this. We're facing a fiscal crisis. There is rightful but intense scrutiny on the way we are managing public safety and working on violence prevention in our city. There are neighborhoods that desperately need resources like social services, better schools, and access to health care and job opportunities. We have to reimagine how all of Chicago's individual parts can connect up to a unified whole that serves all of Chicagoans. We have to build a social infrastructure that binds all of our interests together, helps us to care for and empower one another to lift every boat. One city, not just talk, but deeds. What are we going to do, and how are we going to do it? That's what I'd like to lay out for you this afternoon. Let's first talk about public safety. There is no more top priority for any mayor than the public safety of our citizens. There's too little trust right now between the police and the community. We know this. That relationship is broken, and it feels hopeless for people on both sides of the issue. The homicide rate, the number of unsolved murders, there were just 40, 45 shootings this past weekend. The killing of children who are being gunned down is frightening people, and it's starting to make us a different city. It can't go on like this, and I'm prepared to take concrete steps to repair that trust and make Chicago a safer city for everyone. When I was chief of staff at the city, I was part of the team that first brought about community policing. Back then, it was embraced by the police and the community as a positive step, a sensible step, because it forced regular connection and dialogue between the community members and the police at the beat cop level. We will breathe new life into our community policing program, requiring that beat officers meet regularly with neighborhood residents, answer questions, and share information about crime and issues taking place on those beats. Just as we saw in the 90s, people will interact with the police and the police will respond in kind. Human nature being what it is, that trust will begin to build again. The consent decree that we've all read about on police reform in the federal court is a crucial step in restoring community trust and making sure the police have the resources to do their job. We should never again send our police department out into the streets without tasers and without mental health professionals readily available to them to deal with the situations they encounter. We must have the best trained police force in the United States of America, and I pledge to you today that that will happen in this city. Thank you. That should be our goal. In order to do that, we need state-of-the-art training facilities. Let's build the proposed Police and Fire Training Academy at an acceptable location and give our first responders what they need. I've seen that the only way to drive results is through an obsessive focus on the details and coordinated efforts that hold everyone accountable. With this in mind, as mayor, I will create the Mayor's Office of Violence Prevention and Reduction to oversee the city's public safety strategy. And Sarah Pang knows what I'm talking about here when we focus on things to get things done. This office will put an end to the work being done in silos and start us on the path toward coordinating between the mayor's office, the fire department, the police department, city agencies, and social service and philanthropic organizations. When you do this, you can utilize resources and ideas efficiently and effectively and drive results and ensure compliance with that consent decree. I know how to do this because I've done it before. At City Hall, I implemented a system called Timeline, which was an accountability system that tracked progress being made on city projects. We monitored everything from potholes to large building projects. That's how we pulled off hosting the World Cup soccer tournament in 1994, and that's how we pulled off the 1996 Democratic Convention, both without a hitch. This is the nitty-gritty of how you run a city and keep things efficient. It may sound like it's a little bit in the weeds, and sometimes it's not very glamorous, but this is how you get things done. You want someone in this job who pays attention and knows how to recruit the best people and how to work together to solve our problems, to create the connections that will give us back our identities as Chicagoans we know we are. We don't want to be known as citizens of a city where crime is all we're known for. I know we can do better. I've seen it. I've been a part of it. Let's talk about education. I became the head of the Chicago School Board in the mid-90s when we were at a low point for CPS. There was a crisis at the time. In fact, that's the first sentence of the legislation in 1995 that gave the mayor responsibility for the schools. CPS was widely viewed at that time as one of the worst systems in the country. During my time there, I was able to oversee a renaissance that is still going on today, thankfully. We invested billions of dollars to build and renovate dozens and dozens of schools throughout the city because children cannot be expected to learn in subpar, rundown conditions. We directed more resources to neighborhood schools, launched the selective enrollment school system, charter schools, military academies that are doing very, very well across the city today. We also tremendously increased access to the international baccalaureate programs and advanced placement programs, and we also began the investment in STEM initiatives. This investment paid off, ladies and gentlemen. We saw students increase their math scores 6 years in a row. Reading scores rose 5 out of 6 years. And by the time I left the CPS in 2001, we turned a four-year, $1.4 billion deficit into a $345 million surplus. Thank you. You know, but it's also some of the other things you do that count. As president of the board, I moved the board meetings out of the central office in the daytime out into the schools, into the schools themselves at night, so that parents would have the opportunity to come talk with us. And we, as board members, would have the ability to go see these places firsthand. I believe that decision makers should have a firsthand knowledge and dialogue with the communities that they serve. Our teachers do a fine job in the classroom every day. I know it because I've seen it by visiting hundreds of schools and classrooms in my time. I saw this both at the CPS and the Illinois State Board of Education, which I chaired. Our principals and administrators do a great job. And I think CPS executives like Frank Clark, Janice Jackson, Arnie Rivera, and Jaime Guzman are doing a great job for our city today. So many schools have improved over the years, and new ones have come on the scene that do an outstanding job for our students. Schools like Dixon, Robinson, Ravenswood, Phoenix Military Academy, Solario, Blaine, UIC Noble, Taft, and selective enrollment high schools across the city make us proud. Those are great teachers and principals making it happen every day. But sometimes, despite our best efforts, it isn't enough. And the schools that haven't performed well over the years must be addressed. And we will address them. Parents and students expect the best from us. And students expect the best from us. And we will give it to them, whether it's a leadership change or a turnaround. We will work with communities to forge a solution that makes things better. Children's lives won't wait for us. We can't drag our feet on this, and so we'll move quickly. I'm going to work with the CPS, communities, and the Chicago Teachers Union, among others, to address this. I know from my own experiences at CPS and when I was chair of the State Board of Education how to get it done, and I know we can get it done. We also need to solve a critical problem at our high school level in CPS. Most parents, and some of you in the room may have this experience, begin to fret when your children are in CPS elementary schools at the fifth and sixth grade years. Why do you begin to fret? Because you have a desire for your child to go to a top quality school. But that shouldn't be left up to a game of chance, to a system we call a lottery. That's absurd. When you're in the suburbs of Chicago, you don't have a lottery to go to a top-quality high school, but yet we're subjecting our people to this. We can do better. We can fix that. So today, what I'm proposing is an expansion of the pool of quality options for parents and students at the high school level. This will include selective enrollment high schools, IB programs, charter schools, and more advanced placement and STEM programs. We also need to address the dozens of schools that remain empty following the 2013 closures. It's been 5 years, and only a handful of those schools have been repurposed. Only a handful. Let's get these buildings filled with affordable housing, urban farming, job training, early childhood programs, and other uses. And let's use city incentives to leverage private investment to get it done now. I know we can do better. I know it with 100% confidence because I've seen it and done it before. There's no reason that these schools, which were once centers of their communities, could no longer serve. They should be serving again as anchors of their communities, and we're going to make it happen. Let's talk about neighborhood economic development. The term may sound a little bit cold on its own, but we have to remember, we're talking about real people living in our neighborhoods, many of whom feel that their neighborhoods have been left out of the picture. I believe this city needs to invest in our people and invest in the physical structures that comprise our neighborhoods. Chicago was built with the grit and determination of some of the most industrious people we've ever seen in American history. We've long been the city of big shoulders, but the lack of investment in black and brown communities is cutting the legs right out from under us. In 1968, when I was a 12-year-old boy, Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. And I remember seeing the smoke rising on the west side of Chicago as people rioted in protest. 50 years later, some of those neighborhoods have never been rebuilt. 50 years later. Some buildings were left standing for decades, charred and uninhabitable. Drive through some of these neighborhoods, and you will see what it looks like when a city turns its back. People need to have hope. They need to have dreams. It's hard to give it to them when their neighborhoods are populated by vacant lots covered with trash, abandoned and boarded up buildings, and empty storefronts that used to be bustling commercial strips. We need to rebuild our city, in a word. I've been doing it for decades. As a lawyer, some of my colleagues are here with me today. Day in and day out, we've worked to bring people together, private investment leveraged by smaller amounts of public dollars to build schools, affordable housing, veterans housing, parks and recreation centers, health centers, and shopping centers across this city. We worked on the Mansueto College Prep on 47th and California, retail shopping centers on Pulaski, veterans housing in Humboldt Park, warehouse and distribution facilities in different parts of the city, utility centers on the north and west sides of our city, and community health care centers in Brighton Park. And while I was in the mayor's office, we led the way for the redevelopment of the West Loop, starting with the elimination of the blight that stood in our way. And at the Chicago Park District, I helped build field houses in neighborhoods where people can play sports, work out, and the community can hold programming and events. We developed the Jesse Owens Field House in Calumet Heights, the Taylor Lauridsen Field House in Canaryville, and the Jesse White Community Center on Chicago Avenue. I know how to get these projects done because I've been doing them for years. I know how to bring the financial resources to the table while also involving the community to make sure that their needs are addressed. And I'll tell you something else. I can recognize a good project when I see one. A couple of weeks ago, I met with the Garfield Park Chamber of Commerce. Their president, Mary Ellen Brown, who was supposed to be with us here today, had helped develop a plan called the Chamber's Gateway to Midway. And they had designed an improvement plan for South Cicero Avenue from Midway Airport on up to the Stevenson. This is the route that everybody travels to and from the airport. There are sidewalks, curbs, gutters that need to be repaired, a median that should be beautified, graffiti to be cleaned up, streetlights to be installed, vacant lots that need to be kept clean, and they'd like some of the land there rezoned so that, guess what, we can make a thriving retail strip for about a mile, mile and a half of that land, just like we see on Pulaski a mile to the east. This is a stretch of land that many people see for the first time coming to Chicago. And part of the plan asks for a Welcome to Chicago sign. Can you imagine? A Welcome to Chicago sign. Here today, I promise that group that as mayor, I'll get this project done, and we'll get it done in short order. There's no excuses. You know, it's amazing how you learn simply by going to different neighborhoods and witnessing problems. Let's not call them problems. Let's call them opportunities, challenges perhaps. When you see that firsthand, it changes you. When I was overseeing operations at City Hall, I used to take my staff out in a van and go to different parts of the city to see what we were actually talking about. We learned how catch basins work and what role they play in flooding and draining. We learned why streetlights are more likely to go out after it rains. We learned about water main replacement, gang crime, and fly dumping. And yes, I even visited drug houses. Not when anybody was there. But the police department, I went out with them because I wanted to see these things. Here we were drafting legislation in City Hall about holding owners accountable for their property, But how could you do that, Jay, if you've never seen one? So I walked through these houses with the police officers to see what was going on there. Dark, dingy, cold, no windows, no doors, only a table with two chairs and some drug paraphernalia that had been left on it. There's no substitute, ladies and gentlemen, for firsthand knowledge. In fact, it's how I hold myself accountable. Because once I've seen the problem, I'm going to do everything I can to try to fix it. You know, I saw how hard it was for the homeless and people recently released from prison to find work. And in the mayor's office, I started working with a safe haven to start a citywide landscaping initiative that employs the homeless and ex-offenders. I knew that these were vulnerable populations, and I was committed to finding ways that the city could help by showing them that they could learn skills and have an important job. This is what self-esteem is all about, the sense that you can accomplish something, that your time and your work matters. Through the program, employees got skills based on the job training that provided real work experience that they could use to take steps forward in their lives. I made the city contract with Safe Haven, increasing their business and allowing them to hire more people in need of jobs. And given that their company now works with the private sector, I say let's double down, let's triple down these kinds of investments and get people employed. Thank you. There's no doubt that the city should be increasing these kinds of partnerships. Another great example is the Hartnell Alliance, and I believe Evelyn Diaz is here with us today. Thank you for everything that you do. Evelyn and her organization have a really fascinating program called Ready Chicago. And what that does is targets job programs to young men who are most at risk for gun violence. They even recruit people from gangs to do positive work like landscaping, moving boxes, and serving meals. There is no public money in the program right now. I say that we join forces with them and double, triple, and quadruple a program like that. Let's make the investment in people today. How can the city work hand in glove to strengthen and expand programs like these two great programs, just as illustrations that I've talked about? Well, I think you start by asking them. I talked to Evelyn, and I talked with the people at Safe Haven, and I got their thoughts. This is what I mean when I say, let's connect up the pieces. Yes, let's use our leverage, and let's put the power of City Hall behind initiatives that are already improving and saving lives. As mayor, I would approach neighborhood economic development holistically. That's the only way to get it done. You've got to look at investing in an entire neighborhood, blocks at a time, to create critical mass. It's not enough to build one store. It's not enough to move one city agency into a neighborhood. It won't work. You have to plan meticulously. You need to assemble developers, financing, social services, schools, and other social infrastructure that coalesce to form what is a good neighborhood. Then you implement, and you implement obsessively. This is the mindset I will bring to City Hall. Let's get it done. And just as important as these other topics I've talked about, we must confront our city finances head on. I'll bring this same kind of accountability that I've been talking about to addressing our city's financial crisis. The next mayor is going to face some big challenges. The city needs to spend an additional $1 billion over the next 4 years on its pension funds. $1 billion. That being said, I'm not going to impulsively hit the gas pedal on property taxes. That's not fair to Chicagoans. I am 100% committed to looking for alternative sources of revenue first before going to taxpayers to foot the bill. I plan to work, and people say, well, how are you going to do that? Let's talk about it. I plan to work with Springfield and our next governor to leverage new revenue streams, chief among them, marijuana. Let me repeat it, marijuana. I A pall comes over the room. An overwhelming number of Chicagoans support the legalization of marijuana, and I do too. I do too. Legalization stands to bring in the state, this is the state now, $350 to $700 million a year. The next mayor has got to sit at that table and fight for Chicago's share of the pie. We have to get as big a share of the pie as possible. We have to make our city's case. Why? We're going to be the place where the largest number of dispensaries are located and the stores that will sell this merchandise, not only to people in Chicago, but from people throughout the Midwest. We can't leave a dime on the table, not a dime. And if that means that we need a new home rule tax on top of what the state's thinking about, that's what we have to be in there fighting for. I said we need $1 billion. We better start hacking away at this quickly, and we better do it without putting the 15th brick on the back of the taxpayer. At the same time we're looking at legalizing marijuana, we have to take a look back. We must work to re-examine the cases of people serving time for possession in order to grant clemency for time served and expunge their records. It makes no sense to have people burdened with criminal records for something we've now made legal. And as I first proposed in 2011 when I ran for mayor, I'm also open to building a casino gaming facility in Chicago. Not as much applause on that one, but hold on. Estimates project that we could net up to $300 million a year, depending on the ownership and tax structure that we adopt. And in addition, this kind of project would create thousands of construction and permanent jobs for our residents. It would create business for our businesses in Chicago, and it would attract even more tourists to our city. This idea has been discussed for years, and since our legislature will likely be considering sports betting now, it's time to seize the opportunity and see if we can do this right, the right way in Chicago, instead of simply taxing our citizens. Let's stop sending the Illinois tax gambling dollars to Indiana. Additionally, we can't afford the luxury of allowing TIF surplus money to go unused years for projects that may never happen. We simply need the money to pay our bills, whether they're our pensions, our payroll, or other costs. We need to run this city smartly and shrewdly, and with a new sense of accountability. This is how you move the whole city forward. Not a single neighborhood gets left out of the mix with this plan. You know, I'm sure that like me, you all watched the horror of the mass shooting on Saturday at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. As a father who's raised three daughters in the Jewish faith, it made me positively sick. But I'll tell you, it made me just as sick as an American. A lot of people feel like this is a scary time in our country, for a whole lot of reasons. We are Chicagoans, but we are also Americans. So it hurts when we witness these events. Even bearing witness to the nation's new levels of hyper-partisanship and political tribalism is casting a pall. But I'll tell you something. These times we're living in also present us with a great opportunity. Cities have always been the laboratories where we develop innovation and then prove its value. We show people on the national level what's possible. Having experience in Washington is fine, but don't be looking to D.C. for examples of productivity. If you do, you're going to be waiting a long time. In 1995, when we took over the Chicago Public Schools, Washington didn't lift a finger. We had to roll up our own sleeves and get to work on our own. And yet, 3 years later, President Bill Clinton came to this city and said we were a model for the nation and other school districts across the country should come here to find out what we were doing. Little did we know it would be the world. We had world leaders coming here to find out what we were doing. That's what I want to see happening again in Chicago. This is what I foresee us doing across the board in Chicago. I see a world in which leaders from around the country and around the world come to our city to study our successes. This is what I see in our future. And the best part of it all is that it's doable. All of these things I've talked about today, we must do. We have to look at all of our challenges as opportunities, because that's what they really are. My parents taught me that. My life and my experience has taught me that. Over the next few years, what we do or don't do is going to have a ripple effect on this city's future. That's how this works. You're either decisive or effective, or you're not. You'll hear plenty from candidates for this job about how deeply they believe in this or that, and you'll hear promises about what they're gonna do. You'll hear it every day. And yet Chicago voters will have to ask themselves this question. What's the likelihood that this candidate or that candidate will deliver on any of this stuff? What have they actually done? Do they know how to run a city as big and complex as Chicago? Do they really understand what's waiting for them on the mayor's desk on day one of the job? I'm 62 years old, and I'm a lifelong Chicagoan, so I have a lot of friends here. And more than a handful have said to me, Gary, why the heck do you want this job? It's impossible. Why are you doing this? Let me tell you something. It's not impossible. History and my experience teaches me that it's not. Now, is it a difficult and uphill climb? You bet. But for me, that's the truly exciting part of public service. How can we take a situation where on the surface it feels like there's just no hope, and then turn it into a reality where our friends and neighbors see their lives improved? You get the right people in place, you develop the right plan, apply the right focus, and then you hold everyone on that team accountable every day, including yourself. And that is leadership, and that is how you get it done. How do I know that? Because I've done it before. One of Chicago's famous poets, Gwendolyn Brooks, once said, "I think there are things for all of us to do as long as we're here and we're healthy." I'm here, I'm healthy, and I'm as passionate as I've ever been about serving my city. I want to spend every minute of my time working to create that safer and stronger Chicago that we all want to live in, and pass that on to the next generation. A Chicago where we're all connected and making each other better because of it. That is why I want to serve as your next mayor. I thank you all for listening, and I thank you for all of the things that each and every one of you are doing every day to make our city a better place. It is going to take all of us working together to get it done. Thank you very much.
I have been deputized to be the reader of the questions this afternoon. So the first question has to do with the pension funding issue. And Gary, you spoke about the $1 billion needed over the next 4 years, your reluctance to raise property taxes, and your interest in looking for additional revenue streams. William Baylor wants to know, in light of all of your concerns and the needs, will you borrow the $10 billion through a bond offering to finance pension funding?
My initial reaction to this was no. I thought there was a great deal of risk involved, but I'll tell you what one thing this job is about. It's about evaluating and evaluating deeply. We're in conversations right now with three or four experts about whether or not we could manage the risk of doing such a pension bond swap. And I haven't made a final determination yet, to be honest about you, because I want to finish my homework. But I think that it has to be kept on the table. It has to be kept on the table. Things are getting a little bit more difficult as interest rates creep up because the spread that you originally hoped for may not be there. And I just want to make sure, Christy, that if we did something like this, we have a kind of a safety valve so that if interest rates go so high and our returns on investment are so paltry that we don't saddle those taxpayers with a backdoor tax increase. But I think it's worth looking at. Why? It's what I said earlier. I don't think we should just be going, tax them, fee, water, this, that. I think we have to be careful with this. Citizens get to the tipping point. and people head for the exits. But I'll tell you, I think this is an idea worth looking at further, and we'll have a decision made by the well in advance of the election.
Very good. So obviously you're very knowledgeable, Gary, about the schools, and you've spoken about it. We have three questions I'm going to ask and let you then speak to them together. One is whether or not you plan to continue Mayor Emanuel's expansion of pre-K from Andrew Broy. The second is you spoke about expanding the pool of people who could participate in the quote-unquote lottery. Regina Armour wants to know, why do you support charter schools, and how will you hold on to your commitment to them in light of the opposing political influence? So a charter school question.
Sure.
And then the last and sort of overarching big question from Leonard Dominguez is, what can be done to improve the financial situation in the Chicago public schools? So K-12, charter schools, and the overall financial situation.
We'll have to remember all that. Let's start with charter schools. Charter schools are a hot potato right now. A lot of people duck for cover, run under the table, don't want to deal with them, run the other way. Look, I started charter schools in 1996, 1997. Why? Used to be a darling of the Democratic Party. I don't know what happened over the years. I can tell you what I've seen over the years is they've produced mightily for this city. You have 127 charter school sites in Chicago today where 60-ish thousand students are being educated. And the recent results on ratings that just came out of schools show some of the charter schools, especially in the Noble Group, to be some of the highest performers we have. Now, why would I not continue to support that? Of course I would. Now, you asked about preschool. I was fortunate in the late 90s to start an interesting preschool expansion initiative, which not only just expanded it for expansion's sake, but also began to rehabilitate neighborhoods. We started putting in paid, subsidized pre-K for families in areas around Chicago. Well, this is amazing to me. We had places in Lakeview where the parents weren't going to the schools. How could you have parents from Lakeview not walking down the street to their school? So we started this program to have a subsidized level of preschool so that parents got a break and they would give the local neighborhood school a try. And guess what? We did that in 25 sites. It was wildly successful. Blaine School, just as one example, is a place where nobody went to the school from around the neighborhood. Today, it's 100% occupied by the neighborhood. Same thing in Wildwood, same thing around in different parts of the city. Yes, we have to continue the expansion of pre-K. We must. And we have to look very, very hard at the three-year-old level, too. We can't stop. I've been fortunate to be chairman of the Erickson Institute years ago, and I saw the value and I saw the impact and the power of what early childhood investment can do to somebody's life down the road. And we will absolutely continue and expand that initiative. You asked me about the finances of CPS. We fortunately got a break. When I was chairman of the state school board, we began a rewrite known as SB1. I worked with Andy Menar when we started this. And why did we do that? Because districts like Chicago have extraordinarily large poverty, and they also have larger numbers of students with special needs. Guess what? We wrote the bill and gave greater weight to those two populations so that more money would follow those populations. That has meant hundreds of millions of new dollars, eventually when the bill got through the legislature, meant hundreds of millions of new dollars to our public school system. Another great feature of that initiative was the state finally stepping up to pick up some of the pension obligation that they did for every other district in Illinois except Chicago. I would like to actually do something further. I'd like to finish the job. They don't pick up the 100% of the pension obligation. I'm going to ask them to pick up the entire thing. Now, are we going to have to work on that? You bet. But I've been down in Springfield working with people. When I was chair of the State Board of Education, I remember calling up Governor Quinn and say, look, I think we got to ask for $1 billion new dollars this year. And the governor and I would talk about it, and then we'd go to work. But if you don't ask for $1 billion, Joe, you'll only get $400 or $500 million. Can you imagine if I asked for $400 or $500 million? I would have got nothing. So we have a lot of work to do ahead of us. I think it's doable. People in Springfield are good. There's always this myth that, hey, they're an us and us and them. I drove all over this state working to forge relationships with people. And I believe that people want to see Chicago healthy. And we want to see them healthy. This can get done. So I'm going to ask the state to pick up the rest of the pension fix. And Leonard, you asked that question. What that'll mean is hundreds of millions of dollars in relief for the Chicago Public Schools.
Thanks, Gary. Robert Ware is asking, what will you do to encourage businesses to continue to choose Chicago as a preferred headquarters?
Well, the best evidence is what you live. I mean, my colleagues and I chose Chicago for a headquarters for our business. So I think it's from the heart. We believe in this city. We've worked on these projects to bring people to this city. It's like I said in my remarks, you have to have an obsessiveness. You have to be obsessive about this stuff to bring people into Chicago. And I'm going to say this about Mayor Emanuel. I think he did a fine job in this area. He really worked hard. He worked very hard. I saw him. I worked with him on some of these things. He worked very hard to lure companies into this city. And why is that a big deal? They employ our residents. And our residents need jobs. And we'll see what Amazon winds up doing. I hope they choose Chicago. But short of Amazon, there's an awful lot of other people out there that we can be luring to our city to help our tax base and employ our residents.
You've talked some, Gary, about economic development, obviously. A couple questions relating to that and housing. So one is from Paul Kogan. He talks about new housing being critical to the future of Chicago regarding affordability of housing, the tax base, and restoring a population. So his question is, how do you maintain the growth downtown and yet at the same time really expand the housing development in the neighborhoods? And then Mike Lobby's question, which is kind of related, is what will your economic redevelopment policy be with regard to redeveloping vacant or frozen sites?
Sure. Part of the problem we have in this city is we have an us-them mentality. People who live in certain neighborhoods, and you saw the images I showed earlier, not without some justification. Many of those communities have swaths of vacant land for as far as you can see. And you want to know something? We owe it to them to develop those communities with mixed uses, not just one thing. I mean, I'm fortunate, Christy, that as a lawyer, I've probably spent more time working on affordable housing projects in, not downtown, in neighborhoods of this city in my career. We're doing it right now in Humboldt Park. And that's a tough assignment because you have the forces of gentrification, and you have driving up costs, and you have the need for elderly Spanish-speaking seniors to stay in their neighborhood. But can we make this happen? Yeah, I happen to be working with a great guy, Paul Roldan, who's a genius when it comes to this stuff. And we figured out how to do it. It can be done. See, too many times we get stuck on the myth on the front end that, oh, well, this isn't going to happen. Yes, it can be done. I could go point you to the buildings right now. So, yes, I think that we have to have a very strong focus on when we it depends on how you draw the definition of affordable. We need housing for every strata. Right now, we've got our daughter living with two, three other people just to make the rent. And it's not just, and she, believe me, she's not living in poverty. But she's working two jobs, going to the University of Chicago, and she needs to be able to find housing that's decent for her and her people. So, I mean, this is all the strata need to be looked at. And, by the way, when I was in the mayor's office, I was really proud of one project called the Parade of Homes. This used to be a suburban phenomenon. But you know what? It needs to happen in Chicago, too. We need nice new homes for residents to stay here in different parts of the city, and we may just start by populating some of those areas you saw here with that nice housing.
We have many more questions, but I'm being told we should ask just one more question. So I will combine, as I have, a couple that I think relate on the more personal side to your career in this race. So the first of those is, which position in government that you've held was your favorite and why? The second is, voters sometimes vote for those who've asked for their vote. What is your campaign team's strategy to ask for your vote? And the third and related is, you unquestionably have served with distinction in public office, but you have not won public office. What have you learned from the races that you did not win, and how will you put that to play in this race?
I'll start with the last question first. You know, you don't win a race, and, you know, you get a little down. But, you know, fortunately, my brother and I, my wife and I, we're all constituted kind of strongly, so we come back. But I remember, I don't know if you remember this, son, when we ran for the U.S. Senate 2004, Dick Durbin came to visit us that night, and he said, look, you know, don't worry about this. I lost my first three races. And it taught me something, that you have to be tenacious and persistent in this business if you want the people's vote. And by the way, I'm asking every one of you in here today for your vote. That's our strategy, by the way, Christy. We're asking people for their votes. It's real simple. But when you ask me what was the most job I enjoyed most in government, I would have to say it was the public schools. Why? Because it's so consequential. If you get that right, you help so many people. I just met a gentleman here today who lives in Edgebrook, whose child went to Walter Payton High School. You know what I mean? And I run into people all the time walking down the street who tell me, hey, you did this, you did that. And it's not just the selective enrollment schools. It's Taft High School, on the mend, coming back strong. It's the IB program at Hubbard High School. And when you have the ability to impact people, Kelly High School, where Craig and I went to school. Somebody asked me to mention Kelly earlier today, right? Joe, Kelly High School, better today because of the IB program in that school. You can impact people's lives and change the trajectory. And that, to me, you can't get any better gratification than doing that. So I would say it was the CPS. But thank you all very much. Appreciate it very much.
Stay here. I'm going to give you a gift.
Okay.